November 8th is fast approaching, and candidates for Wisconsin's 115 legislative seats up for election have just 7 weeks or less to make their final pitch to voters in their districts. Today on the West Side, we welcome back two candidates from New Richmond who beat out a field in the August primary and now compete head-to-head for the right to sit in the 29th State Assembly District seat. I'm Rich Kramer. This is the 29th State Assembly District Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. The 29th State Assembly District is made up of most of the eastern half of St. Croix County and about a quarter of the western end of Dunn County. Some of the cities, towns, and villages within the district include Menominee, Knapp, Downing, Glenwood City, Hammond, Baldwin, Woodville, and New Richmond, to name a few. The 29th Assembly District has been in Republican hands for the past 10 years. In 2006, John Murtha was elected, and he's been reelected ever since, while also rising through the Republican ranks and becoming Majority Caucus Chairperson last year. John Murtha announced that he would be retiring from state politics last year, and he would not be seeking another term as the representative of the 29th District. So today, on the West Side, we'll hear from the Democrat and the Republican candidate who won their primaries and hope to take his seat. First, I'd like to introduce Scotty Ard. Scotty Ard is a Democrat from New Richmond who serves as a New Richmond City Council member. Scotty Ard, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Rich.
Good to have you. And Rob Staffschult is the Republican in the race. He is from New Richmond as well. He's a small business owner, founder and owner, family farm manager, and mortgage banker from New Richmond. Welcome back, Rob.
Thanks for having us. Yep, thanks for having us, Rich.
Our pleasure. Also, listeners, we want to welcome you back to the phone lines. Give us a call at 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question for either of the candidates or both, or if you have a comment that you'd like to share. 1-800-228-5615. We've got one caller right now. We'll get to them in just a bit. If you'd rather not go live on the air, check out our Westside Facebook page. Just type in your question, and we'll do our best to get it on the air in a timely manner. So, as I did last time, we had both of you in the studio with your perspective Republican and Democrat competitors. I want to get a sense again of why you're running and what you bring to the table. So, Scotty Ard, let me start with you. Why do you want the job as representative for the 29th? And why, again, do you think you deserve the job?
For too long, Wisconsin voices have not been heard. Voices from the 29th have been listened to, but not acted upon. It's time to take Wisconsin back. We've seen the stripping of open government. We've seen the closing of doors, the stripping of conservation protections, the defunding of the UW system, which is one of our greatest industries, the defunding of K-12 programs. We have teachers who are leaving the state in droves because there is no more collective bargaining, and better wages and positions are available outside of state. It is time for the people to take Wisconsin back.
All right. Rob Staffschult, same question to you. Why, again, do you want to represent the 29th? Why do you want to be in the state assembly? And what qualifies you and what leads you to believe that you deserve the job?
Well, Rich is a small business owner and a fourth-generation farmer from Richmond. I really think I have a unique, rounded perspective as to the character of our district, and I'd like to use that experience along with the fact that I'm a father of a 13-year-old girl who's in the eighth grade, and I'd like to use that to help build a stronger economy and increase our pay level at our private sector jobs, as well as strengthen our educational system, as my daughter's right in the middle of her K-12. So everything in District 29 is super important to me and relates to something I have going on. So that's why I thought I'd step forward.
All right. Thank you both for that. I'll start off with something that happened last week. It wasn't in the district, but it has a lot to do with northern Wisconsin, really. Two Republican lawmakers held a meeting last week in Cumberland that they called the Great Lakes Wolf Summit. It focused on they were focusing on the dangers posed by growing numbers of Wisconsin wolves to livestock, hunting dogs, pets, and even people, as they put it. The meeting's goal was political in nature, to convince the U.S. Congress, and specifically U.S. Democratic senators, to support a bill removing the gray wolf from the endangered species list so that Wisconsin can resume its annual wolf hunt. Rob Stafshel, let me start with you. Do you support delisting the gray wolf and letting the state manage it?
Absolutely. Actually, Rich, I was one of two private individuals that was listed on a USDA federal suit to delist wolves years ago. And I think one of the most important things we have going in northern Wisconsin is some of our sportsmen's heritage, our outdoor environmental type activities that we do, and that relates right to our economy. In northern Wisconsin, a huge part of their economy is revolved around tourism, and a major part of that tourism is coming to see the great places and the parks and the natural resources we have, but as well it's hunting, fishing, spending time in our outdoors. So I think, unfortunately, that the wolf population in the state of Wisconsin, there was a management plan put in place by biologists years ago, and that was followed, and they've restored themselves to Wisconsin. But unfortunately, I think politics interjected in that, and we've taken that control away from our state and local biologists to manage our own wolf population. I think that's really what most of the legislators want to do, is, and part of that wolf summit was to make sure that we can restore the control back on a local state level so that we can manage our own wolf population.
Scotty Ard, your thoughts on the delisting? The wolves were taken off the list by the Fish and Game, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, but then federal judge, because of a lawsuit, put it back on in 2014. Do you think the wolf should be delisted, and do you think that part of a bill that these folks that were supporting removing the wolf from the list, part of the bill would make it so that a judge would not be able to interfere again with the relisting? So your thoughts on that. Would you like to see the wolf taken off the endangered species list?
I think any animal that we have on the endangered species list should remain until its population is stable. Unfortunately, the gray wolf is one of the animals who is affected by a practice we do in Wisconsin, which is baiting. And this changes the ecological and environmental factors for all of these animals. Even though, say, if you're bear baiting, that bait is to be under a log. It is to be out of a reach for a deer or for an animal to come and find it, other than a bear. However, it happens. And so then we have wolf packs, which are forming. We have an unnatural number of births happening because there's additional foods put out for almost 144 days a year. I think the gray wolf has been one of the animals who has been the recipient of baiting, and now everyone is upset about the population. I think anytime man steps into nature, we're going to see an unbalance. Yes, I believe that any animal which has outgrown its habitat by numbers, we have to control, because otherwise we are endangering that animal as well as others, as well as farm and persons.
As far as numbers, I think the DNR put a number out there years ago, and it was brought up again by lawmakers when the wolf hunt was created. I think the number was 350 wolves for the state of Wisconsin. That's what the quota was set at. The last study showed by the DNR, it was a minimum wolf count that was conducted in winter of last year, I believe, but they've counted 800 or so wolves. So do you think, Scotty Arnold, I'll follow up with you and then I'll go to Rob Stafshel, do you think we need to reduce the wolf numbers to that 350, or do you think that's a magic number of sorts?
I think it's an arbitrary number. Until you sit down with biologists and environmentalists and look at the habitat that the wolves are currently in and look at the encroachment of habitat that the wolves are dealing with by man, you cannot come up with an arbitrary number of we should have this many wolves per square foot. It doesn't make sense. We are a growing state. And if we want to keep our natural balance, then we actually have to live by some of the guidelines of nature. We also have to do some legislation which helps promote a natural environment for the wolves so that the focus is the wolves live out a natural life with all enemies and or deaths and or diseases or starvation that comes with living in the wild. We have changed that perspective by our invasion of their territory.
Rob Staffschultz, your thoughts on, you know, the 350 number. Do you think that number makes sense? Do you think it's arbitrary, as Scott Yard mentioned?
Well, that number was developed by the biologist that she talks about that we need to listen to. So the original number way back years and years ago was 100.
Yeah.
And that was brought to the Cattlemen's Association, the Farm Bureau, sportsmen's groups, whatever. And the biologists are the ones that came back and said, you know what, 100 is not... it's not a safe number because they can flux up or down by a greater percentage where 100 could cause them problems. So they wanted to raise the targeted goal to 350. And that was put out by our state's biologists and our scientists and the people that know what the wolf habitat is. To say that we're encroaching their habitat, a major portion of these wolves live in northern Wisconsin. We have vast areas of forested regions. We have national forests. We have state forests. We have county forests. So... I think those biologists do a great job, and I think they know their habitat and how many wolves the landscape can handle, and they have it in a tiered system, which is predominantly good wolf habitat and then progressively less the farther south you go in our state and the more populated it gets. So I believe in those biologists, and I believe in those scientists, and I think the 350 number that they put out is reasonable, and like I said before, I think politics intervened in that, and once they surpassed that and they didn't get delisted and didn't get delisted, and unfortunately I think sometimes in politics, wolves or otherwise, there tends to be a don't do anything, and then there's a big knee-jerk reaction back the other way. So I think hopefully we can migrate towards a center line of good, sound wolf management, but in order to do that, we really need the state to have their own capacity to manage a wolf population.
Follow up for you. I'm not sure if you were just endorsed by them or if you're a member of the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on what Scott Yard said about the baiting of bears, which is you place the bait inside of a log or something that they can't mm-hmm. get at, and they it's aimed to keep other animals out. Do you think we're interfering with nature by baiting? And do you think it should be stopped?
You know, that's a matter for the legislator to decide, and biologists can weigh in on that. Thus far, baiting's legal, and through the DNR channels, they allow baiting as one of their rules and regulation practices. So, mm-hmm. again, I trust to them. But I am a member of the Bear Hunter Association, but in my experience, I know that you can put a big hollow log out there and put a big lid on it that's fitted on top, and game cameras prove that wolves can come in and they can lift that lid right off of there. So you can fairly confidently keep the coon and the deer and that things out, but a wolf is a great big powerful animal, and they can knock those over and get in there. And in fact, there's a lot of baits where the bears don't come because the wolves kind of take those over. So they have the ability to get that if they want it.
800-228-5615 is the number to call. We're joined in studio by the two candidates running for the 29th State Assembly District seat that was held or is currently held by John Murtha, but he is retiring from state politics next year. I am joined by Scotty Arge, he's a Democrat from New Richmond, and Rob Staffschultz, he is a Republican from New Richmond. 800-228-5615. We've got Melanie from Star Prairie on the phone. Thanks, Melanie, for hanging on for a while there. What's on your mind?
Hey, Rich, thanks for taking my call. Mine's a DNR question. It's closely related to what you talked about, so I think it's great. I'll just add a few more details and try and go as quick as I can. But this is about the bear hound dog depredation payouts.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. They've reached $77,500 so far this year, and about 60% of those are payouts to bear hound hunters who sent their dogs into previously established caution areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Rob Staffschultz, he can speak to this. He has received, I know in the past, $5,000 at least for payouts for two hound dogs that he lost, which were sent into a previously marked caution areas. The dogs are sent in off of bear bait sites beginning July 1st. There's over 4.6 million to 5 million gallons of bait in Wisconsin, which wolves become habituated to. These hounder payouts, I don't know if people know this, but these hounder payouts are taxpayer money or donations intended for endangered resources, or their license fee money, which should be used for conservation. In total, and then I'll get to my question, in total, $625,000 have gone to bear hound hunters in Wisconsin. So my question is, The DNR's budget has been cut drastically by the legislature. I'd like to know from both candidates where they stand on this issue of bear hound dog payments as it's currently written into statute.
All right. Thank you very much for the call and the question, Melanie. Rob Staffschult, let me start with you. Where do you stand on the wolf or the depredation payments for?
Well, the depredation payments are not specifically just to bear hound.
Right. Also livestock.
Livestock, yeah. The
even pets, I think, if you have a pet dog.
It is, and I'm going to forget the date, so I apologize. But a long time ago when the wolf management plan was established in the state of Wisconsin, they went to the different user groups of the forest and as well as the Cattlemen's Association, Farm Bureau, folks like that, and said if we're going to try to promote the wolves, reestablishing them ourselves across the state, they're going to be endangered species. When you try to do that, one of the things that they came up with as part of their plan was to any kind of depredation payment, they would reimburse those folks. So
it was aimed at keeping people from killing wolves illegally.
Yes, part of the it's not an issue, but part of the rules of an endangered species is it, you know, like if something's doing damage to your property, that's an endangered species in your property, you and it's on your land, you have the right to defend your land and your assets. So that was one of the things they tried to do to offset it. Now the great news is if we can move this forward and get it delisted on the federal level so it's back in management hands in the state, that stuff would go away. There's a 5-year monitoring period after delisting. Mm. When that's over, that dissolves. So
The depredation payment.
My understanding is depredation payments would end after 5 years of delisting from the federal level.
All right. Scotty Ard, your thoughts on the depredation payments to livestock owners, producers, also to bear hounders.
The depredation payments are necessary and certainly needed, especially when you're dealing with livestock that's lost by farmers. The loss of a family pet is a little bit more rare. But I think the concern here is the DNR clearly marks caution areas on all of their maps. You can see them online or pretty much anywhere that you're at, tapping into the DNR website or having them send you the hard copy map. Anytime that a hunter is running their bear hounds in a caution area, if the hounds are killed, this is tragic enough in itself because it's not just an animal losing its life, but it's oftentimes a companion. Mm-hmm. But that goes back to the handler. They shouldn't be running in caution areas, and I don't believe they should be paid for the loss of a hound in a caution area. To me, it sets up a very divisive payment method in which people will take advantage, and it appears in some of the records that persons have taken advantage.
And Rob Staffschult, at this Great Lakes Wolf Summit that I was at, some of the hounders offered kind of a counterpoint to what the idea that you shouldn't bring your dogs into wolf or a territory where a wolf has been known or where another depredation happened. They were saying that there's fewer and fewer places to run your dogs.
In fact, if you look at that site, a page or two later, you can see the wolf pack territorial zones that the DNR has put out. And basically the top one-third of our state is saturated from edge to edge. So there's really no place where you can hunt where there's not going to be wolves. It's an impractical, it sounds good, but in practice, the wolves are basically everywhere north of Highway 8. I would argue north of 94, at least on the western side, wolves from there all the way up to the top end of our state. So they're pretty well saturated in all of the areas that bear hound guys would hunt. So it's kind of a complication.
Yeah, it's an issue that we have filled many hours talking about here on the west side. When we come back from our break, we're going to continue our conversation with the candidates running for the 29th State Assembly District. I'm joined by Rob Staffschult, a Republican from New Richmond, and Scotty Ard, a Democrat from New Richmond. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment. We already had a great call from Star Prairie. Keep them coming, folks. 1-800-228-5615. This is The West Side.
Support for WPR comes from the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin Foster Care Program, dedicated to helping thousands of Wisconsin foster kids connect with caring families. More about being a foster parent is at chw.org/TFC. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, celebrating Septoberfest this fall. presenting raptor programs, live animal shows, Native American art, and more. Details are at nationaleaglecenter.org/events.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the 29th State Assembly District Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good Monday morning to you. Thanks for listening. I'm joined by Democrat Scotty Art of New Richmond and Republican Rob Staffschult of New Richmond. One of these two will represent the 29th State Assembly District in the legislature during a critical time, state biennial budget writing time. But to get there, they need your vote. Today we're getting them to lay out their platforms, and we're also going to ask them a myriad of questions. If you've got a question, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. Otherwise, you can post on the Westside Facebook page. Another thing that dominated the news last week, probably more than anything in Wisconsin, was it was a leak of documents to the Guardian newspaper. These documents come from what was called a John Doe investigation. So the Guardian published these troves of emails and other documents leaked from someone involved in the John Doe investigation into Governor Walker's campaign and its links with the conservative fundraising group Wisconsin Club for Growth. These documents show that Governor Walker solicited millions in donations from businesses and wealthy individuals that were funneled through the Club for Growth and then into his recall campaign and the campaigns of other state senators that were recalled. Even though the Club for Growth spent heavily on Walker and his allies, they did not have to make public who their donations were coming from or how big they were because they're a nonprofit. What would you tell voters about this case and about how millions in anonymous donations are impacting elections? Scotty Yard, let me start with you.
The John Doe case brought a lot to light for the public. And as we see with the check which was released from the Menards for $1 million, mm-hmm. it was shocking because most people didn't realize this was happening, that within the change in campaign finance in Wisconsin, these corporate entities can literally donate unlimited amounts of money to essentially shadow groups, which in turn donate them to the candidates. It is a means to an end, essentially. You can buy an election. The more your name is out there, the more ad time you can purchase on radio and television, it totally outbuys anyone's ability to compete with that. The greatest issue, I think, though, is that donors are not being identified. And when you're talking about six-figure sums, the people have the right to know who is backing this candidate and for how much. So I'm completely in favor of revamping all campaign finance and creating a campaign finance system where all donations must come from the district that you are going to represent, mm-hmm. that you can raise no more funds than the population of that district, and that any donations must be from a registered voter of the district. Then you end all of the who's getting what from whom and how much and who's named and who's not. Hmm. It should be a public right to know who is donating.
Scotty Yard, I want to follow up. What do you say to the argument that has been posed by conservative groups that, you know, before Citizens United and the state's changes to election contribution limits, unions could spend, you know, huge amounts on candidates. And I think the argument was basically that companies, that business owners, didn't have the same kind of pull under the old rules. Do you buy any of that?
I don't. I think everyone has the ability, if you're getting into the six-figure line, into that bank population, they can contribute if they so desire. The unions contributed based on their membership. So it was individual members who were contributing for the union to represent them in a political cause. The businesses and business interests that those persons worked for had that opportunity to support their candidate as well. And at that time, they were able to without having any limits placed on them. So I don't buy that argument.
Rob Staffschult, what would you tell voters about this whole John Doe investigation, or more importantly, I mean, about the way that money is able to be generated by these groups, anonymous money that can then be used and even directed by certain campaigns.
Well, I think it's a little hypocritical to say that the unions can gather money from all their union members so that the union can represent them to future legislators and people in government, but that business owners and people that are part of business groups can't put their money together and represent them. So I think it's one of those things where we either need to eliminate it or leave it the way it is so that both sides are represented equally. And as far as the Club for Growth and groups like that, there are shadow groups that collect money and then pay into large campaigns or whatever. That's not a Republican unique incident. Both sides are doing that. They both have groups that help support their side in the exact same way. So to point a finger at one side or the other, and it's equal both ways as far as I'm concerned, that both sides are doing the same thing. So it's an issue that we need to decide whether or not we want to do that or not, but it's not a partisan issue, I don't believe.
Going back to the union, the way that they can raise money, that still those people are public. It's public information. Whereas in this shadow group situation, it is anonymous. It sounds like what some are saying is people should be able to make contributions as big as they want to who they want. Should they have to be public?
I don't know if I'd go along with saying someone could make a donation as big as they want to who they want. We raised, like, for our campaign, an individual donor went from $500 to $1,000,
right,
recently in campaign finance. But those limits are set so that one Warren Buffett, if you will, can't come in and buy an election like Scotty was talking about. That I think that's one of the biggest concerns people are, is that they don't have any control because it's bought off on both sides. But and that's one way you can limit that, is through having campaign finance limits for donations.
With that, let's go to the phones again. We're going to hear from Eric in New Richmond. Eric, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi, I got a Second Amendment question.
Great.
Candidates. So, Second Amendment's pretty important to me, and I would like to know the candidates' views. The NRA gave Rob an A rating, and Scotty got a D rating, so I'd like to know what their stances on further gun control.
All right. Thanks for that, Eric. I appreciate it. Rob Staffschult, I'll start with you. If you got an A rating, I think I know where you stand. But
yeah.
What's your response?
So I look at gun control not just – and a lot of people want to break it down and say, well, they don't need that to hunt. And the Second Amendment really is not about hunting. It's about a personal freedom and right. And if you're not a criminal, you shouldn't be treated like one. So to say that you need an AR-15 to go hunting is probably not true. You can do it with a single shot 22, but that's your right. So I don't like the government taking away people's rights. Mm-hmm. One of the things along those lines is you can say, well, I don't need a 400 horsepower pickup truck to go down the freeway either, but if I'm not out there causing criminal problems, then I should have the right to do so. So I always caution very heavily when it's taking away people's personal freedoms and rights, and the Second Amendment is one of those things I really believe in.
And Scotty Ard, for in terms of Democrats, a D rating isn't that bad. I mean, a lot of them are get F ratings. So what's your thought on the caller's question?
I've never received a D in my life. The NRA has broken a new line, and I'll wear it like a badge of honor because it shows that the NRA is not in touch with their constituents. If they were, then they would know me better, and they don't. I support the Second Amendment. I taught my sister how to shoot in order to defend herself in a very volatile situation. I have been around guns my entire life. What I did not agree with the NRA is that I believe that any business, school, university, or technical college has the right to determine if they want someone carrying a handgun on their premises. That is not a decision for the general public to make. That is a decision for a business owner or the school systems to determine based on their own campus and situation. I also did not support the NRA in the idea that anyone who has a mental or emotional illness or challenge, that guns should not be removed from their homes if that person is a threat to themselves or others. And I said, absolutely. The idea of having a gun is to preserve life. It is for sport. It is for hunting. But if you are a gun owner, you're certainly not going to put a gun in the hand of someone who may not be stable enough to handle that weapon. So I disagreed with them. I also disagreed with them on the idea that handguns should not be registered sales, even if it is between family, because I believe that responsible gun owners have nothing to hide, and that in order to keep gun ownership in the light of the public and to support gun ownership on all levels, that the responsible gun owner is not going to have a problem with registering any gun that he or she owns.
Is this, I'm just curious, did they send out, because I know that candidates get these fill-in-the-blanks, basically, or these is that from the NRA? Is that where they gauge where you stand on things from
mailers? So when you're doing this, and I think Scotty will agree, is in the before the primary, we get 35 probably different surveys from all kinds of different groups, NRA is included in that. And the unfortunate part about that is a lot of these groups post a paragraph explaining their situation, and they post one question, and it's a yes or no. And
Black or white.
And unfortunately, I like the ones better where there's room for explanation as to why you think, or, if everything was black and white, we wouldn't need 99 people in the state assembly. So it would be a check yes or no system. But
I just thought that was interesting when I started learning about how candidates are, how they, you know, all these different ads saying that what a person stands for is based on making a checkbox. So with that, let's take our final break so we have a nice big chunk of time to keep talking about the issues towards the end of the hour. I'm joined by Scotty Ard, a Democrat from New Richmond, and Rob Stafschult, a Republican from New Richmond. Both want to represent the 29th State Assembly District, which includes the eastern half of St. Croix County and a western chunk of Dunn County. Some of the cities and towns you may know of in the district include Menominee, Knapp, New Richmond, Glenwood City, Hammond, Baldwin, and Woodville, many others that I'm missing here. If you've got a question for the candidates, give us a call, 1-800-228-5615, whether you live in the district or not, because these candidates also represent the state as a whole. 1-800-228-5615. We'll be back in just a bit.
Support for WPR comes from Glassnickel Pizza, 18 years of employee and customer-inspired pizzas made from scratch at 8 Wisconsin locations, dedicated to sustainability practices and community support. GlassnickelPizza.com. Support also comes from Marshfield Clinic, providing cancer care to the Chippewa Valley for more than 20 years, offering a full complement of cancer specialists, research into new treatment options, and survivorship programs. MarshfieldClinic.org/cancer.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to the West Side 29th State Assembly District Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm joined in the studios by the candidates running for the 29th, hoping to replace John Murtha, who is retiring after 10 years in the State Assembly this year. The candidates are Rob Stafschult. He's a Republican, a small business owner, and manages a family farm. He's a mortgage banker in New Richmond. Scotty Ard is a Democrat who serves on the New Richmond City Council. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page. Transportation funding for the state has been in the news. The governor has been, Governor Walker, has been traveling the state trying to drum up support for a transportation budget that he and his secretary, Mark Gottlieb, put together to fund the state's highways and local roads. The budget recommends increases in state funding to counties and municipalities, pretty high increases, comparatively speaking. It also includes delaying some major highway projects to help cut down the borrowing to $500 million instead of what was over $1 billion in previous budgets. So many, especially local governments, are applauding the increase to fund local road projects. But some critics, including two top Republican lawmakers, say the budget that the governor is putting forward and that the transportation secretary put forward is a political fix and doesn't address the long-term issues of gas taxes not keeping up with road costs. So, Rob Stafschult, let me start with you. Do you think the governor's transportation budget, though somewhat popular, more popular than others, is it kicking the can down the road? Is it not addressing the real issue like some are saying, with regard to transportation funding?
Well, I think in District 29, we have the city of Menominee is a 17,000 plus or minus city. But a lot of our district, and where I'm from out in Aaron Prairie Township, is fairly rural, and our rural roads are in really, really tough shape, and I think nobody denies that or argues that fact. So the fact is what we do with it. And I think it's a great start what the governor proposed his budget would do is transfer some of the money. Quite frankly, as a District 29 representative, I believe my job is to fight for District 29. So if we can suck a little of the millions of dollars that's spent in the southeast corner of the state out for some projects down there, which really don't affect probably very many of the people that live in this district, and pull them up here and spend them on our roads and help get started back on track on putting our roads in. You know, one of the things I think that people fail to mention is several governorships ago, we had a pretty good sized transportation fund and they robbed it. So I think it's a painful process, but I think we're starting to look at a process on trying to build that back up and move ourselves forward and try to fix the roads we can. I spent some time and went to the Towns Association meeting in St. Croix County, and it, you know, as a rural guy and living in the community, driving back and forth town every day, you know the roads are bumpy, but you don't grasp how widespread that is if you don't think about it. And at the Towns Association, a gentleman said that basically it's a 25-year lifespan of rural town roads. So being conservative, if you could say that was 30, roughly half of your road should be 15 years old or less. And they asked for a show of hands how many people thought that there was 50% of their roads were 15 years old or less, and not one hand went up. So obviously there's no argument there's a problem there. So we really need to address that, and I think this is a good first step.
Good first step. Scott Yard, your take on the governor and the transportation secretary's budget. Do you believe that it's a political budget kind of proposal, or do you think it's kicking the can down the road? And even if it is, what do you think about the increased money to the locals?
It's a Band-Aid. It's a Band-Aid. We have allowed transportation to go unnoticed for so long, and now it's time to pay the piper. We do have roads that need considerable repair. And it's not just in District 29, it's across the state. In St. Croix County, we are very blessed to have an amazing county transportation department. And on that note, we have villages and towns and cities which work together to try and keep our roadways running smoothly and keep them in good repair. Dunn County, Menominee does not have that advantage. So when we start looking at the problem with county roads and we start looking at older roads or roads that have been vacated that are still being used in farming, yes, we want safe roads. We want our families and everyone else to be able to go down a Wisconsin road and not worry if they're going to be lost in a pothole or that there's no shoulder for them to pull over on if they need to. I think the governor is doing this in an instance where he sees that the tide is turning as far as people's belief in his administration. We need to look at long-term fixes for the roads. We need to come up with funding that equates to better roads and continued maintenance, repair, and replacement.
Does that mean added fees or taxes?
If that means that we have to raise the gas tax to raise that amount of money, then I'm for it, as long as there's a sunset. Continually taxing and taxing and taxing with no end in sight is ridiculous. It only allows those who have no fiduciary responsibility to just continue to spend. We need to draw the line. Homeowners do it all the time. Families in Wisconsin live on a budget. So does the state, and it needs to get tighter.
Rob Staffschultz, with regards to the gas tax, you know, we've heard more talk about perhaps increasing that or other fees. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, one thing I want to highlight is if we talk about other fees like registration fees, that really only affects our residents. And one of the problems I have that would cause me to try to shy away from that at all costs is the fact that it only affects our people and it's only paid for by our residents, where you know, there's a lot of people, Minnesota and bordering states and just people in the United States come here to visit, they come here to whatever, and they use our roads. The transportation system for semis comes in and out of our state, and that benefits people outside of our state. So I really don't like the registration increase. When it comes to a gas tax, my concern is if we raise the gas tax, Scotty alluded to having a sunset, and my concern is that it won't ever sunset. It'll just keep getting renewed and renewed and becomes perpetual. But the other thing that in today's world that we need to look at is our cars are getting better and better mileage. And in fact, with the presence of electric cars, I know Scotty's got a friend that's got a smart car, and that's an interesting perspective to look at that. If he doesn't buy much gas, he doesn't really get affected, and he's not really paying for the roads that his car goes up and down. But that's something you need to look at as environmental options come forward for our transportation system, whether or not the gas tax is the right option.
All right, with that, let's go to the phones. We've got Judy in Elk Mound. Judy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I read an article in the Leader Telegram about the dairy expansion in Menominee, where they'll be adding, I think it's 5,000 cows, going to be a total of over 7,000.
Emerald,
just concerned about the waste and the runoff that will cause for the waterways, and wondering how each of the candidates feels about this issue.
All right, Scotty, let me start with you. I'm not sure if it's in Menominee or not, but CAFOs in general.
It is in Emerald.
Okay.
And there are a number of proposed CAFOs throughout the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
The issue that comes in is that currently we really don't have any language which directly addresses a CAFO in Wisconsin statute. So what we need to give consideration to is that most operations of this size are, one, going to be installing high-capacity wells. Two, they are going to need to have manure secured or invest in a manure digester, which is extraordinarily expensive. Mm. But there are a number of concerns. And in an area such as western Wisconsin or eastern Wisconsin, because of our karst bedrock, any manure runoff, if manure is placed on a frozen field, if manure is placed early spring, if it runs off into dry runs, which we have quite a few of, we risk contaminating our aquifer. High-capacity wells, which are needed for CAFOs, imbalance the water pressure. So those persons who have your standard well, there are going to be hours during the day when that high-capacity well is running that they will not have water pressure. Therefore, they will not have water. So this is a consideration to also look at. But just the air quality surrounding a CAFO of this size, to me, is a direct violation of the Constitution, which says in Wisconsin that you have the right to enjoy your property to its fullest extent. So whether it's air, water, or land pollution, the CAFOs at this time, we should really be looking at a moratorium until we have specific language in place which protects our water, protects our environment, and protects our property values.
Rob Staffschult, it's as long as they've dairy farms have gotten bigger, people have been concerned about it. So you've got another concern about the CAFO that's going to be expanding in Emerald. So what's your response to the caller's
concern? Well, I think this is a very diverse question. You can't just center it tightly. But as a father of a 13-year-old and someone who's a very avid sportsman outdoors and enjoys our natural resources, and just I think our general and public in general just really like, we have to maintain that we have clean water. So I think that's held high in everyone's hands. That's a pretty universal issue. But, you know, I'm a fourth-generation farmer. We don't have any cattle or any livestock. Unfortunately, I'm deathly allergic to those, so I was not able to do that. But as a small business person, one of the things that I don't like is government overregulation of businesses. And one of the ideas is limit how big a farm can get, and I think that's a dangerous slope when you start limiting the success level and the size of a business, whether it's a farm or a business in town or a manufacturing center or whatever. I have a hard time limiting the size of that, but I think our DNR does a great job of monitoring permits, making sure that there's a plan, and I think there will be rules and regulations going forward that are developed to specifically address CAFOs, high-capacity wells, stuff like that. So I look forward to getting those in place so that everybody feels a little more comfortable about when they see something like that in the paper. The other thing that I want to touch on is we have ag-exclusive zoning in some of those townships. So as the state comes with comprehensive planning, and the state mandates down to the county and the county down to the township what those people can do with their property. If it's ag-exclusive zoning, that the only thing they can do with their property is use it for agricultural purposes. So some people are surprised that they would put it there, but I think you need to remind yourself that it's ag-exclusive zoning as well. So that if you're in that kind of area, that's the kind of thing that potentially could come to your ag-exclusively zoned township.
Sure. I do want to kind of push back a little bit or follow up. You mentioned that the state is doing a great job with the permits and the reviewing the permits. There was an audit that kind of suggested that the state DNR, because of staffing concerns, were kind of having trouble keeping track or monitoring or staying up on these permits for large CAFOs. And in their budget request this year, Secretary Kathy Stepp has asked for 4 additional positions. Would you support funding an additional 4 people to keep up the monitoring for manure, basically records for high capacity?
I would absolutely support the 4 positions. Whether or not it would be increased funding specifically for those positions.
No, they're going to be shifting them, I should have said.
Yeah. From somewhere else.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Yep, I think so, because I think the DNR is no different than any other agency. When you cut its budget, oftentimes they cut where the general public sees it the most, trying to get their budget built back up. So clean water is just something we can't afford to skimp on. And if we need to cut budgets in other areas for maybe less essential products, clean water is not one of those.
Scotty Art, what are your thoughts on the DNR shifting, looking to get 4 more people into the CAFO arena to monitor manure records?
It's not just the DNR that needs to expand here. When the DNR, when services were cut and departments were cut within the DNR, that's when problems started. But one of the greatest problems is that we've known that CAFOs were coming down the road for quite some time. They've been in England, Scotland, and Wales for almost a decade. Mm-hmm. It was given that they would be coming to the United States. So I look at the legislatures and say, what took you so long? There's nothing in protective language, and now we're all scrambling. So, yes, I support having the 4 positions. Actually, I'd support 40 positions so that we could start getting things back on track.
Where would the funding come for that, in theory?
I can think of a number of higher-ups.
Okay. With that, let's go to the phones for the final question from the phone lines today. And we're going to go to Jim and Eau Claire. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi. Hey. Thank you for taking my call. This question is actually for both candidates, but I'm going to do some finger pointing here. Why is it that the Republicans control legislature have a private economic development corporation? What is that all about? We don't have, as a public government, we don't have any control or oversight on this organization. Why is that?
All right. Thanks for that. I'll go to Rob Staffschult. Your thoughts on the fact that we went from the Department of Commerce to what's now the WEDC. It's kind of a private-public hybrid, and there's been a lot of criticisms of it. So why the need for the private side of that?
Well, I guess first off, I don't know that it's solely owned by the Republican side of things. I think it's our public entity, and it seems to be somewhat of a private corporation that helps enhance our business activities and try to build our stronger economy. I think our economy is recovering well. I think we're doing well, but it wasn't so many years ago that wasn't true, and I think that was one of the efforts put forward to try to help get us back on track as quickly and most efficiently as possible.
I guess if I could sum up what Jim was saying is, do you think that the Department of Commerce would have been able as nimble and able to respond as perhaps, you know, the governor has said that's the benefit of having it be a quasi-public institution?
You know, having never been elected and been involved with the budgets and the acts of the Chamber of Commerce down there, both ways. I have a hard time distinguishing what might be better, but obviously it was instilled for a reason, and hopefully that they're doing what they need to do, and maybe someday we don't need that if we switch back, but at this time that's what they think we need to do.
All right, Scotty Ard, your thoughts. Governor Walker pushed hard for WEDC. There were some problems, but a lot of people say that it's still doing what it's getting better at doing what it was supposed to do.
In concept, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation is a fantastic idea, public-private partnership. But the problem came in that there were far too many tax credits being given to corporations to come into the state, in which job tracking was never done. So the devil is in the details, and WEDC has failed at the details. And this is a question that has resounded throughout the state. We are giving tax credits to companies, corporations, small businesses, large businesses, but we have no job tracking. Whereas could that money not be better invest in jobs training and other programs which enable people and empower people to get into the workforce? So this is where we see the question. I believe the WEDC can be salvaged and that it can do an outstanding job if it is given the appropriate parameters.
We are getting very close to the top of the hour, so I want to ask you both this. Voters in 9 states across the U.S. will vote on whether to legalize recreational use or medical use of marijuana. There have been some bills put forth by usually Democrats in Wisconsin about legalizing marijuana, either for medicinal or recreational. Would you support that? Scotty Ard, I'll start with you, and we have to be very brief.
I would most definitely support legalization of marijuana for medicinal use. After seeing many cancer patients go through horrendous chemotherapy, marijuana was the one resolve that they had without having to take any additional chemicals through the use of pharmaceuticals.
All right. Rob Stafshall, would you support medical or recreational use of marijuana?
I would not support the recreational use, but the medical field seems to be supportive. And in fact, I think the Republican Assembly passed part of a bill that had something to do with that last year.
Yeah, it had to do with an oil that's found in it.
It
doesn't make you high or anything.
Right, and I think that was a great first step, and I would support that same bill.
All right, very good. Thanks to our candidates. I'd like to thank both for joining the discussion today. Look for Democrat Scotty Ard and Republican Rob Stafshall on the November ballot in Eastern St. Croix and Western Dunn County in November. Best of luck to both of you. I'd also like to thank Team Westside, including Henry Lippold, Mort Cypress, Samantha Green, Bonnie Clark, and, of course, Dean Kallenbeck and Debbie Brown. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.